There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This is a Shares for Beginners quick tip. Essential lessons, questions answered.
Behavioral finance is the application of psychology to financial decision making. By allowing psychological biases and emotions to affect investment decisions, investors can do serious harm to their wealth. Zafar Subedar has over 15 years of experience in the financial services industry and academia. In this quick tip, he talks about how to avoid self-sabotaging behavior, the guru syndrome, and the concept of loss aversion.
It describes the pain of losing on an investment, and what the psychologists and what the behavioral finance academics have found is that the pain of losing is 2.5 times more than an equivalent gain.
How do they measure that? I mean, I've heard that statistic. How do they measure that?
Oh, they've measured that through a number of studies around uncertainty.
Questionnaires.
And, well, experiments, they've been the predominant way of doing that. And this 2.5 times, it's not just with university students, it's with individual investors.
Mm-hmm.
I think I did a study a long time ago with finance professionals. This was just after the GFC, and I think they viewed the loss about 40 times more than an equivalent gain. So if you think about it,
they had professional skin in the game, didn't
that's
they?
That's right. And I think the way to interpret it is like, if I've gained 10%, I feel good. But if I lose 10%, I feel very, very bad. That's the sort of qualitative summary of it.
Mm.
But I think the other point around loss aversion and shame, there's a couple of points. The reason why we hold on to our investments, so go back to that loss aversion, you've lost 5, 10%, but it feels 2.5 times more than that actual loss. The piece is we now feel that, hang on, I like this investment. I've liked it for a number of reasons, but I think it's going to rebound. So this is where we are letting the losers ride, because we are in the hope that this investment will rebound. The second point is it's also that attachment. You've done so much work on this investment. You spent a lot of hours sourcing information, making the decision. And probably thirdly, you've gone out and told other people, so you've got that shame of, hang on, I'm going to end up here with egg on my face because, you know, I spent so much time looking at this investment and now it's underwater by 10, 15%. I need to hold on to it because it's going to come good. So this is a challenge. So this shame or this loss aversion, that is, you know, something that explains why we ride losers in the hope of our investments to recover. But if we go back to those earlier studies, we tend to do the opposite and cap out our winners and ride those losers.
Mm.
And also, the other thing I should say is someone will say, what about tax and those sort of things? Well, yes, there could be some tax advantages there with riding some of the losers. But, you know, that's an area where I recommend you talk to your tax agent on.
That's right. It's not about tax. It's about making money in the end, isn't it?
Well, that's the old saying, isn't it? If you're paying tax, you're making money.
What about searching for gurus? I think there's a lot of people who want a guru as well.
Yeah, and there was a very, very peculiar study. It was actually done by some New Zealand academics, probably mid-2000s, and they call this the socialization effect. So if you think about it, you're going into a new environment, think about you're going into a new workplace, or you're going into a new school if you're a child, or you're going into some sort of professional environment. When you walk into that environment, you, from a previous experience, what your average was, your average, you know, are these people really good to work with? Yeah, they're pretty good. They're average compared to what I've experienced in the past. So all of a sudden, if you were at a previous workplace and your average might have been 7 for your previous employees in terms of how to work with and all that sort of jazz. Now you get a new workplace and all of a sudden it's a new environment and that average might be 6 or might be 5 or whatever it is. It's declining, or it could go the other way. So by going into a new environment, you start to change your mean. Now, what does that mean for investing? back to your point about gurus, you will start sourcing people at the barbecue. You will start following other investment commentators that are out there, and that now frames your environment to make a decision. So if they're a good stock picker or they're an average stock picker, do you measure that? And if they're not a good stock picker, if you haven't objectively measured that, guess what? Your new average is going to be a lot lower than perhaps what it was before. So it's very, very crucial what environment you're in and where you source information from to help you with, again, your long-term wealth.
And it's also worth knowing that gurus are fallible as well. They maybe don't even have any better idea of investing than you do.
Well, that's right. And we've seen now the 10-second investment updates you get on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
So the world is getting a lot more complex than what it was probably just 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't have made any money without those. Joke, listeners, yeah. So the gurus that are setting themselves up on YouTube and TikTok and all over the social media now, they're not going through the rigorous process that many professionals in the financial industry have to do to justify their purchases and buying and selling decisions. What's something to watch out for, and how can people think about these supposed gurus?
So I think one way to look at gurus and anyone that you use to influence your decision-making process is to consider their track record. So it's not just buy a particular investment. It's like, well, overall, how is their portfolio? Do they even have a portfolio? Do they show their holdings? Do they show what their investment mandate is? So, for example, some people might be high risk versus someone that's low risk. So how do you compare the pair, so to speak? So that's why probably have a look at the institutional investors or the professional investors. So if you look at particularly active ETF providers, they've got all their holdings on their website.
They have a process, and they tell you exactly what they're doing, how they're investing, and their reasons for investing as well.
That's right. They're very transparent. They've got a monthly update where they talk about what they've done with the portfolio, what the outlook is, what were the major drivers and contributors to the performance over the last month. So you've got a transparent record there, and obviously you can go through and see the investment processes as well. And that's a bare minimum amount of verification you should be using to look at investment recommendations or obviously the performance of that type of investment you're considering. So there's a difference there between gurus and professionals. And again, looking at track records and making sure the results are actually valid is important.
Okay, so we've heard about these biases. What are the shortcuts that we can take to become aware of them and be able to basically put these biases back in the place where they should be, which is not affecting our investing decisions?
Yeah, and this is it's a great question. I struggled with myself for a long time, and look, I studied this for a period of time. It's very difficult to do, first of all, and if you commit to this journey, there's no doubt you will be a better invest. And I think the key thing is, if you can identify some of these biases, you won't feel as ruffled, definitely as much during some of these panic moments or the moments of volatility that we've been going through. So it's definitely an exercise worth doing. I guess one of them, and we just discussed it, was really keeping a record of your investment decisions, and particularly where you were really confident with a decision. How did that go? So track that. You know, that's probably the first key point. So where you were feeling overconfident, very high conviction call, how did that investment decision go? And also, what sources of information did you use? You must be consistent. So if you're looking at Australian shares or you're looking at global shares, what sources of information, who else were you listening to? Ensure that you are consistent. Because whenever you're buying or selling, it becomes a relative decision. And you want to ensure that you use the same sources of information to come to that conclusion. Thirdly, obviously, don't monitor results too frequently. Whenever you purchase something, particularly if it's a risky investment, there will be volatility. Use that time. Use that volatility to ride out your decision. Give it time. So that's also important. Again, don't be myopic. Let your investment thesis mature. Another one, and it's probably a little bit more qualitative, is an investment out of character? So if you've historically been someone that's invested in listed investments and now you're considering something that's not as liquid, such as venture capital or private equity, private debt, Why are you going down that path? And what prism are you going to look through to evaluate this investment? So that's something you should look at, particularly, I think, with the new sorts of investment offerings that are out there, new asset classes, be it cryptocurrency or more sophisticated type investments. I also think you need to consider the multidimensional nature of risk. So it's not a particular risk to an investment, but what about things such as credit, particular relationships? So we know what's happening if you've invested with anything linked to Russia. Think about those things when you're investing in something peculiar or something that's higher risk. Is there one or two other qualitative risks that may affect that type of business that you can't see in the financial statements?
If you found this podcast helpful, please tell a friend, especially if it's someone who needs to start thinking about investing for their future. You'll be helping them and helping me to keep this show on the road.
Shares for Beginners is for information and educational purposes only. It isn't financial advice, and you shouldn't buy or sell any investments based on what you've heard here. Any opinion or commentary is the view of the speaker only, not Shares for Beginners. This podcast doesn't replace professional advice regarding your personal financial needs, circumstances, or current situation.
And thank you for listening to my podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.